For such good questions this morning, I think that's part of how the learning expands, is being able to apply it to our own situations. So this morning I was looking more at mindful self-compassion, changing our physiological state in the moment. And for the rest of the morning, we're looking at practices that will help us rewire the brain and change our response to experience over time, or even change our response to ourselves over time. So this is a quote from Richie Davidson, who runs the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds at University of Wisconsin, saying, "The brain is shaped by experience. And because we have a choice about what experiences we want to use to shape our brain, we have a responsibility to choose the experiences that will shape the brain toward the wise and the wholesome." So once we know about neuroplasticity and that the brain can change lifelong, then we begin to realize, oh, the choices I make about the experiences I have and how that affects the wiring of my brain really makes a big difference. And so we begin to shift into a sense of responsibility. I'm going to very, very briefly go over mechanisms of brain change simply because it's the substrate of what we're doing for the rest of the morning. So the first neuroscientist was the Buddha, who said, "Whatever the practitioner frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of the mind," which is exactly what's happening in conditioning, which is how the brain learns from experience in the first place. So when any experience happens, any experience at all, it will cause neurons in the brain to fire. We repeat the experience, we'll repeat the neural firing. With enough repetition of the experience, neurons that fire together wire together, we strengthen the connections among those neurons, and it actually creates new neural circuitry, new neural pathways, new neural structure. It's important to remember that conditioning is neutral. Positive experiences change the brain, negative experiences change the brain. So it's really important that we choose which experiences we want to have as much as possible. Laura, and there's a microphone here.
Can you say a few words about how early trauma fits into this?
I can say more than a few words. Because the brain develops originally in interactions with other people. And at first it develops only in interactions with other people. So that's how the brain develops, is the interactions with our early caregivers. And then eventually there are other caregivers and there are other experiences, but initially the brain develops because of the interactions we have with other people. When those interactions go well, meaning when there actually is kindness and care and responsiveness and empathy and help and support, the brain develops well, it develops optimally, and learns all the capacities it needs to learn to navigate life. But when that early conditioning hasn't gone so well, then the brain doesn't develop optimally. And we can either become a little too rigid in how we respond to life events, what they call neural cement, or we can become not quite gelled, a little too chaotic, a little too flexible still, neural swamp. And so that's when later experiences in life can help us rewire and recondition whatever has happened in the brain. But one of my favorite quotes from Lou Cozzolino, who's a neuropsychologist and does a lot of work with relationships and attachment, said that the secure attachment, the optimal engagement, responsiveness, help and support, protection, is the best buffer we have against stress, trauma, and psychopathology. So when we haven't had those optimal relational experiences, then we try to have them later with friends, with therapists, with coaches, with partners, with spiritual figures. We have those relationships later that help us recover that internal secure base. So, but I teach whole weekend workshops on all that. Yeah. Any other? Okay. So the metaphor that's given for conditioning, which is just how the brain learns its patterns in the first place, is if you have rain falling down the hillside, and of course we've seen that a lot in the last couple of weeks, At first, the rain can go down the hillside any way it pleases, but eventually the rain starts following the other raindrops and they create pathways and even gullies, and it makes it harder and harder for the rain to go down the hillside any other way. It gets caught in those ruts. And that's what happens with conditioning. In creating or changing neural pathways, we can get into habits 80% of the time. We are operating out of our conditioning. We're not even thinking about what we're doing. And that's nature's way of being efficient. But when we want to change those pathways, then we have to deliberately use experiences to condition new pathways or to rewire the old ones. So I want to quote here from Paul Gilbert, who wrote The Compassionate Mind. And he's talking about this shift that we make when we take responsibility for the choices that we make in our lives. He's saying, given our evolutionary legacy that the human brain took 200 million years to evolve, and given genetic templates we all have an encoding that we're born with in our genes that will shape our temperament, and given our family of origin conditioning, which we were just talking about, the experiences early on that shaped the development of the brain, and given the norms and expectations of our culture and our society, because we all grow up in a value system about how to navigate the world, who we are and how we cope is not our fault. And that can be very freeing and very reassuring as we're struggling with defenses and with our personality patterns, to know that how we got here was not our choice. But, oops, what just happened? Hello. We just disappear. Thank you. Did I step on a cable or something? I might have done it.
Oh, the computer.
Is it out of power?
Can you check the computer cord cable? The computer just slept, I think.
It got tired. So it'll come back in that many seconds. You know, there's many, many, many times in my life I'm so glad I wrote a book on resilience. Okay, thank you. Was anyone practicing self-compassion? Oh, this hurts. This is hard. May I accept this moment? But given the neuroplasticity and what we know, that the brain can change lifelong, which is really true, you know, neuroscientists didn't know that for sure until 15 years ago. The technology that allows us to peek inside the black box of the brain and see what's happening in the brain as it responds to real events in real time, that technology is only 20 years old. And so neuroplasticity has only been deemed a scientific reality in the last 15 years. Now we know that, and now we can take that for granted. But before that, people thought once we matured as adults that the brain didn't change again. Now we know that it does. But given neuroplasticity and the choices of our own self-directed neuroplasticity, who we are and how we cope becomes our responsibility. And so that goes back to Viktor Frankl: between every stimulus and response, there's a space, and in that space is the choice. So that's what we're going to be learning how to do more this morning. I also really like this quote from Pema Chodron, because, you know, bad things happen in the world. Part of the human condition is that we are vulnerable to pain and suffering, to loss and death. And we can resist that or refuse that, or we can open to it as an opportunity for our own growth. And she says, the Buddhist teachings are fabulous at simply working with what's happening as your path of awakening, rather than treating your life experiences as some kind of deviation from what is supposed to be happening. The more difficulties you have, in fact, the greater opportunity there is to let them transform you. The difficult things provoke all your irritations and bring your habitual patterns to the surface. and that becomes the moment of truth. You have the choice to launch into the lousy habitual patterns you already have, or to stay with the rawness and discomfort of the situation and let it transform you on the spot. So that's what we're hoping that we can do with the exercises we'll be doing today. So the first way we have of rewiring the brain and changing our habitual responses is new conditioning. It's simply giving ourselves a new experience that will create new neural circuitry, that will create a new implicit habit. So every time we do a gratitude practice, or we practice our listening skills, or we focus attention, or we do a self-compassion, self-acceptance practice, we're creating change in the brain. And the more that we do those patterns over time, the more change that we can actually create. So I wanted to lead you in another meditation where hopefully you'll be able to experience that. When we do this kind of new experience, new cultivating, new neural patterns of firing, the more we can change our brain functioning. So letting yourself find a posture that's comfortable, where you can be calm and relaxed, yet engaged and alert. Sometimes helps to sit up kind of straight with your support for your back and your chin slightly tucked. You can gently close your eyes. And if you wish, you can place your hand on your heart or any place on the body where it feels comfortable and soothing, as a reminder to bring loving awareness to your experience. And begin to focus your attention a little bit more on your breathing. Find where you can locate your breathing most easily, whether that's in your nostrils or your throat, or the rise and fall of your chest or belly. Whenever your attention wanders, just simply gently, kindly bring it back to the breath and let your body breathe you. Now notice any physical sensations of stress that you may be holding in your body. Perhaps in your forehead, or your neck, or your jaw. And breathe gently and soothingly into those areas, releasing any tension as you can. Notice if you become aware of holding any difficult emotions anywhere in your body. Any contraction or tightness of anger. Any agitation or worry about the future. Or uneasiness about the past. Let yourself remember and be comforted. Every human being experiences stress and worry throughout the day. And every human being carries that stress and worry in their body. So incline your awareness toward the contraction, toward the discomfort, toward the uneasiness, as you would incline your attention to a beloved child or a pet, with curiosity and tenderness and care. Incline your loving attention toward yourself, offering yourself kindness and goodwill simply because of the stress and difficult emotions that you're holding in your body right now. offer words of kindness and compassion to yourself, slowly and affectionately. For example, may I know that I am safe. May I experience deep inner peace. May I be free of fear and full of love. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself just as I am in this moment. May I offer myself all the compassion I need. See if you can find your own language to convey compassion for yourself. If you were to say the words that were exactly the words you need to hear right now, what would those words be? If you notice your mind wandering, again, return your awareness to the sensations of your breathing and then to the phrases of self-compassion. If a difficult emotion arises, return your awareness to your breathing and then to the phrases of self-compassion. Finally, just allow yourself to rest comfortably and softly in your body, savoring any sense of peace or stillness. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. So any questions or comments about an exercise like that, deliberately giving yourself a new experience that over time will allow you to relate to yourself and to your experiences differently? It's just using new conditioning. We okay? Yes, please. And wait for the mic. Wait for the mic.
Thank you. When you say give it time, What are you talking, like months, years? When would we notice something happening?
You know, there's two ways I'll answer that one also. The neuroscientists do not agree at all how long it takes to establish a new pattern in the brain. I've heard 17 times, I've heard 56 times. So there's no agreement. What does seem to work is what Paul Gilbert says, little and often. So it's better to do something small for a short amount of time and do it many times a day or many times a week. We tend to establish our mindfulness practice better if we meditate every morning for 15 minutes than if we meditate for an hour once on a weekend. So little and often is the way that the brain is more likely to change. So do this for 5 minutes, three times a day, and likely you'll begin to experience a difference. Yeah. Other question. Over here, please.
Thank you. You may be getting into this a little later, but I was wondering if this practice helps with compassion towards other people.
Generally, any time we can have more compassion for ourselves, it's easier to feel our heart open for other people. Very often, people learn to do this in reverse. They'll feel compassion from other people for themselves, and that helps us take in and feel compassion for ourselves, and then we can turn around and send it back out to other people. So we're sort of beginning in the middle when we're cultivating self-compassion for ourselves. But a way to do that is to recognize, and we'll do an exercise this morning about that, recognizing many moments when we've experienced compassion for other people, from other people, and taking that in and beginning to cultivate it for ourselves. So yes, absolutely, we're on that trajectory. And we'll talk this afternoon about compassion for others.
Okay, because I notice that my mind can be very judgmental at times towards others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I wanted to try to work with so mm-hmm. that I'm not so judgmental.
So there are so many practices to work with our tendency to be judgmental with other people. I think it's helpful to have compassion for ourselves that we're so self-judgmental or so judgmental of other people. Just to, oh, it's so hard, I do that all the time, I can't seem to change. And have compassion for that. It just keeps the space open for something to change. Yeah. Okay, any other? Okay. Then I want to talk about another mechanism of brain change and lead you in an exercise of that called reconditioning. So new conditioning, new experience, new neural pathways will lay down new neural tracks right next door to the old ones. Doesn't rewire them. But reconditioning will rewire old patterns in the brain. The neuroscientists have seen this happen in their scanners only in the last 5 to 7 years. But it is the basis of all trauma therapy. It is the basis of how we rewire previously traumatizing events. The technical name is called memory deconsolidation reconsolidation. And what that means is when we remember something, we're lighting up all the neural networks that constellate that memory. And very often we can light up the body sensations and the emotions as well as our thoughts and beliefs about it. If we can juxtapose a previous negative experience with something that's positive that directly disconfirms or contradicts it, when the positive is more powerful, the neurons of both memories will fall apart and they'll rewire, but they'll rewire together. And the positive experience will rewire the old experience. And they can now see that happening in the scanners. So I'm going to lead you in a very simple exercise now, and a more complicated one later this morning, to experience that for ourselves, to experience how we can use self-compassion to do that kind of reconditioning. So I'm going to lead you through the exercise first, and then I'll put up the slide. So again, letting yourself sit comfortably, quietly, more inwardly. Bring awareness to your body by noticing your posture. The world of sensation occurring throughout your body. You can close your eyes and take 3 deep, relaxing breaths. The deep breathing actually helps your body manage emotions as they arise better. Place your hand on your heart for a moment to remind yourself that you're present here in the room and that you are worthy of kindness and care. Now let yourself recall a mild to moderately difficult situation that you're in right now. It may be a health problem, maybe a stress in a relationship. Maybe there's a loved one in pain. Please do not choose the most difficult problem at the moment, but neither something completely trivial. You're choosing something that will actually evoke a little stress or discomfort in your body when you think of it. And clearly visualize the situation. Imagine yourself there, who else is there? What are you saying or doing? What are they saying or doing? And as you recollect or imagine this situation, name the different emotions that arise in you. Anger or sadness, grief or confusion, fear or longing, despair or shame. And then identify the strongest emotion associated with this particular situation. And repeat the name of this emotion to yourself in a gentle, understanding voice, as if you were validating for a friend what he or she is feeling. That's longing, or that's grief. Use the same warm-hearted tone of voice for yourself that you would use for someone that you love and care about. Now expand your awareness to your body as a whole. And as you recall this difficult situation or moment that you're in, scan your body for where you feel it most easily. You can kind of sweep through your body from head to toe, stopping wherever you sense the most tension or discomfort. And choose one single location in your body where the feeling expresses itself the most strongly. It might be a muscle tension or an achy feeling. And incline your mind gently toward that spot. Now soften into that location in your body. Let the muscles be soft without a requirement that they become soft, but like simply applying heat to sore muscles. Softening, softening, softening. You're not trying to make the sensation go away. You're just holding it in a tender embrace. And if you wish, let yourself just soften around the edges. There's no need to go all the way in. If you experience too much discomfort with the emotion, just stay with your breath until you feel calmer. Now start to soothe yourself because you struggle in this way. Perhaps you can put your hand on your heart again and feel your body breathe. Perhaps bring kind or encouraging words to mind, such as, "Oh, it is so hard to feel this. May I be kind to myself? May I hold myself in loving awareness." Finally, allow the discomfort to be there. Let go of the wish for the discomfort to disappear. Allow the discomfort to come and go as it pleases, like a guest in your own home, allowing, allowing, allowing. Softening, soothing, allowing. You can repeat these words like a mantra, reminding yourself to incline toward your suffering with tenderness and care. And then take a moment to reflect on any shifts in your experience, savoring if there is more of a sense of peace or acceptance or compassion. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So taking a moment to reflect on that experience. Any questions or comments or reflections about using this tool of reconditioning to shift our experience and our relationship to our experience over time? This eventually becomes a different way of being. So, me. Yes, please, and Natalie.
I was wondering if it seems neurologically it would be more powerful in this sort of thing to actually speak instead of internally speak. I don't know if that's an issue.
Speaking requires the functioning of the left hemisphere of the brain, requires language centers. When we're trying to deal with difficult emotions or difficult memories, or different difficult stories or beliefs about ourselves, it's actually more effective in the brain to do that from the bottom up. When we can light up the networks of memory in the body, in the emotional centers, which is in the lower brain, as well as then our thoughts or beliefs about ourselves. But I was telling someone earlier, there's actually no direct neuronal connection between the left hemisphere of the brain and the limbic system. Which is why it doesn't do us any good to say, oh, stop that, just get over it. Because the lower brain is not listening. Okay, so the communication has to go through the right hemisphere. And we do that when we bring up body sensations, emotions, visual images. That's how we get that neuronal connection going. So that's why it's a little more effective to do it from the bottom up. That's not to say that what we think about ourselves or how we talk to ourselves isn't important, but the reconditioning happens when we can light up all of the neural networks, not just our thoughts. Yeah. So, any other? Yes, please.
May I wait?
I was just wondering if you could clarify for me what you mean by soften into that location.
So usually we feel an emotion in our body as a physical sensation because that's how it's stored. And so if there's any kind of discomfort, tension, tightness, contraction, we're just letting those muscles relax a little bit. We're not solving the problem. We're just letting the way it's being held in our body soften a little bit, and that will shift our state. So just even imagining warmth, or you can put your hand on that part of your body to give it some soothing touch to see if that just relaxes the tension. We're not trying to make it happen, but we're allowing it to happen, and it shifts. Okay. Any other? Okay. There's another way the brain has of processing information that's important when we're trying to offer ourselves self-compassion. So what we've done so far is in the focused mode of attention in the brain. When we're focused on a task, when we're focused on the details, when we're focused on ourselves, certain neural structures will light up in the brain. And that's what we use to use the new conditioning and the reconditioning. We are deliberately choosing experiences that will shift our sense of ourselves. When the neuroscientists first began looking at brain activity in their scanners, they would ask people to do something, to do a task, like name a color or name a shape. And then they would see what parts of the brain lit up when they were doing that task. They assumed that when we weren't being asked to do anything specifically, that the brain would be quiet. Anyone who's ever tried to meditate knows that when we're not guarding and guiding the attention of the brain, it becomes more active than ever and all over the brain. They now call that the default network. And that's what happens when we sit quietly and all of a sudden all the worries and thoughts about the past or future start coming up. But besides that evoking that sense of worry, because we're not focusing on something specific, it's just going off in general, the positive way of that mode of brain functioning is to create a mental play space. And we can experience this often in a daydream or a reverie where we're not controlling or guiding where the thoughts are going and things just kind of start to meander and play around. And that's what we use for deconditioning. So in deconditioning, we're using our imagination, we're using guided visualizations, because when the brain imagines an image, it's as real to the brain as if it was happening in real time, which is why guided imagery is so powerful. We can do guided meditations, we can have our reverie and daydreams, and the brain is making its own associations, its own links, it's connecting dots in its own way, and that's the neural basis for ahas and epiphanies and revelations. And so we're going to learn to use that mode of functioning in the brain as well to be able to bring, to resource ourselves with more compassion. So one more guided meditation about that. Letting yourself sit comfortably and your attention going more inward. You can take a few deep breaths to settle more in your body. If you wish, putting your hand on your heart to remind yourself to give yourself loving attention, a loving presence. Now you imagine yourself in a place that is safe and comfortable. It could be a room in your home. It could be a favorite beach or meadow in the woods. Any place where you feel peaceful, at ease, and safe. And let yourself relax into the safety of this place. Let yourself enjoy the feeling and comfort of this place. Then in your imagination, you receive a visitor, a warm and compassionate presence who embodies the qualities of wisdom and strength and unconditional love. You may have felt this kind of presence at some point in your life, and if you wish, you can remember that moment. This compassionate being may be a spiritual figure, like the Buddha or the Dalai Lama. It may be a compassionate person from your past, like a loving grandparent. It may be a close friend or a partner. This being loves you and would like you to be happy, and would like to visit with you for a little while. So really imagine this being in as much detail as possible. And especially imagine how it feels to be in his or her presence. Imagine yourself meeting this visitor. You may go out and greet them, or you can receive him and her into your safe space. And notice how you greet this compassionate friend. You may stand and bow. You may shake hands. You may hug. Do whatever feels comfortable and safe for you. Now place yourself in just the right relationship with your compassionate friend, whatever feels right. You may walk together. You may sit side by side. You may face each other, sitting or standing. If your compassionate friend is someone you feel close to, you may even imagine resting your head on their shoulder or in their lap. Hold your friend in your heart and mind, and let yourself feel held in their heart and mind. Enjoy the safety and good feeling of the companionship. There's nothing special you need to do except savor the moment. Now allow yourself to recall any difficulties that you may have in your life right now. Your compassionate friend has come to be with you and to care about you and to tell you something, something that is just what you need to hear in your life right now. So take a moment to listen carefully to what your compassionate friend has come to say. And if no words come, that's okay too. Just share his or her good company and loving presence. That's a blessing in itself. Just be with your friend, listening if there is anything you need to hear. Now, perhaps you would like to say something to your compassionate friend. Say what you would like to say, if anything. And your friend listens deeply, openly, and completely understands you. As the time nears for your friend to depart, imagine that your friend would like to give you something, a tangible material object. As you place your hands together, your friend reaches out and puts an object into your hands, or the object simply appears in your hands. Something that has special meaning for you. Wait and see what comes. Notice what it is, look it over carefully, and then place it in your pocket or somewhere in your safe place for safekeeping. Take one last moment to savor this visit with your friend. Savor what just happened, enjoying the words and the object that was given to you. Thank your friend for the visit. And notice how you say goodbye. You're with yourself in your safe place again. Now remember that your compassionate friend is a part of you. Your own deep intuitive wisdom. Therefore, you can invite your friend back for another visit anytime you wish. You can tap into the wisdom of your compassionate friend anytime you wish. The wisdom and compassion is available to you anytime you wish, whenever you need it the most. And when you're ready, you can slowly open your eyes. So any questions about this exercise in particular, or this process of using deconditioning? Yes, please.
I was aware and reactive to when you said just savor the moment. You don't have to do anything except savor the moment. Mm-hmm. That, to me, felt like it was a task that I didn't really want to take on. And so I was watching that, and I know that from my past, it was like, just be happy, just savor the moment. And they were, I was equating them. And I know what it's like to savor the moment, and it's mm-hmm. something that is very sweet. But mm-hmm. I was just watching how the two were mm-hmm. inextricably linked. And I'm not quite sure how to hardwire it other than noticing it, which I did, the mindfulness and some compassion that I felt angry that the two were so linked in my mind.
So you're exactly on the right track, right? You notice what happens, you have compassion for yourself that happens, you have compassion for the anger, and yes, over time, you'll be able to decouple those and get new associations, new experiences around the savoring. But you know, beautiful that you could notice that and bring some compassion to that. That's the process. That's exactly the process. Yeah. This, it gives me a chance to say that when we're practicing self-compassion, sometimes it's easy to focus. There's a lot of openness and presence, and sometimes it's not. We're distracted, we're confused, we're overwhelmed, we're angry, and it's okay to take a break. There is a rhythm of being engaged and then disengaged, being open and then being closed. It's like the heart beating and then it relaxes. And so we have permission to be compassionate with our own rhythm of doing these kinds of practices and exercises. Yeah. Any other? Yes, please.
I was wondering how much the wording has to do with that. For instance, to use the word just do this maybe has a stronger thing to overcome than if you said try this. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's a two-way street from the teacher and the student.
Oh, that's beautiful. I mean, everything that we're doing is an experiment. You try. If it works, you keep doing it. If not, you do something else. So there's always that attitude of openness, curiosity, learning. Let's just see what might happen. Especially with something like this. This is a guided visualization. It's a deconditioning mode of processing. The brain is creating its own images and the object and whatever the words are. We're just letting that happen. So there's a lot of permission, whatever works. And anything that I say today, if there's other languaging that works better, if there are other images that work better, if it just works to be quiet and peaceful, then just do that. There's a lot of permission as we develop these practices. Yeah. Yes, please, Michelle.
This is just kind of a technical question to kind of understand the definition. So I'm having a little trouble understanding the difference between the conditioning and the deconditioning, because what we just did in the guided imagery, to mm-hmm. me, is new conditioning. So what? How are you defining okay. the difference?
So new conditioning and reconditioning, we're deliberately choosing an experience that will cause our brain to go in a different direction. Deconditioning, yes, you were following my guided visualization, but your brain, every person in this room is going to have a different way of playing with those words and playing with those images. So we're trying to create a play space where the brain is free to do that. So rather than a gratitude practice, I'm going to say these phrases, or a reconditioning, I'm going to juxtapose where I feel grateful with where I feel scared. The deconditioning is simply, oh, I was just walking down the street and I felt so grateful to be alive. I mean, it's a different way that the brain is functioning. So it's more of a allowing than a guiding. That's the difference. Yeah. Yes, please.
I just wanted to say, I think the most powerful thing I noticed with this is related to what you said earlier about permission. Mm-hmm. What I found with both the compassionate friend and the self-compassion one was that in that space of being peaceful and allowing yourself to feel a desire for your own life to have ease and kindness and all of that, mm-hmm. it's like it cut right through the denial when you ask the question, is there something you need to hear yourself say? Mm-hmm. Or is there something that your friend needs to say to you?
Right.
It's like it, with that space of kindness, suddenly a hard truth could hurt, could hit you that you were not otherwise maybe permitting yourself to hear. Right. That's what I found.
There's a lot of permission, and part of that is if we're not going into self-judgment and self-criticism, there's a lot more permission to hear anything that needs to happen. Yeah. Any other? Wendy.
It was very interesting how I, you didn't mention this earlier, but there was a, there's a way that through my, my own practice of the work that I do, I'm using my compassion towards other people to actually create more self-compassion for myself.
Oh, yeah.
The reverse is true.
Right.
So the interesting thing, and I think that I'm not the only one who experiences this, is, and it's in my conditioning, it's in my upbringing, it's in my ethnicity, is that my struggle today that I'm having is about feeling like I'm going to let somebody else down because I'm not going to be able to be present for them when what I really want to do is take care of myself. Mm-hmm. So the feeling that I'm experiencing today is this feeling of guilt. Mm-hmm. Is that a feeling? I don't know. It's sort of that guilt, shame thing. So when I was sitting and doing this reconditioning piece just now, it really came up very strongly, and it was very, very, very difficult because there's something about this practice that makes me want to connect with other people, and that's how I actually recondition and rewire my brain is through that connection with other people. So I just struggle with that.
Okay.
Do I go and do I maybe sit differently in this environment and maybe open my heart to just being and not necessarily wanting to be there, or do I just go home? And I mean, it's just a very...
So I have three ways of answering that, and then we'll go on to an exercise.
My neurosis.
I do teach an exercise. I don't think I included it today, but a way of evoking compassion for oneself is to imagine someone that you feel a lot of compassion for, and whatever that situation is, and you get the flow of compassion going, and then you just slip yourself into that compassion stream. The feeling is already going, and then you become the object of that feeling. So that is a way of cultivating some self-compassion for ourselves. There can be resistance to self-compassion because people think it's self-indulgent, it's self-absorbed, it's selfish. And actually, when we can bring that kind of kindness and tenderness and care to ourselves, it's easier to keep the heart open to other people. It's not a demotivator at all. It's not even a distraction. And this afternoon, I'll teach an exercise in compassion for other people when we're caregivers. And so it's sometimes easy to have care for the other person, and we forget ourselves out of the equation altogether. So how to have compassion for ourselves at the same time that we're sending compassion to them so that we don't go into compassion fatigue. So, yeah, we'll do that this afternoon. So now I'm actually going to have to move the agenda along. I mean, I love having all the questions, but I want to do a few more exercises before we take our lunch break. So... this is one of my favorite quotes of all time from Theodore Rubin, that kindness is more important than wisdom. And the recognition of that is the beginning of wisdom. So we're in a tradition here where wisdom and compassion are considered the two wings of the Dharma. But I think it's really important to be able sometimes to emphasize the compassion side, which gives us the space to open to the wisdom side. So I'm going to lead us in an exercise. This is where we turn off the tape. You're going to do this in groups of four, so you'll move around in a moment. But what you're going to do is...
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.